This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mook Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mook Delivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with Mook Delivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
At this point, I have no clever intro, and I'm pretty much at a loss for words. So all I will say is welcome to the Blue Monday podcast. I want to get both your answer on this. Dave, I know you've probably got a fair chunk longer than Craig, so I'll go to Craig first. Where does that last night rank among your favourite games you've ever seen at Portman Road, Craig? Think about it, Dave. Ready for your answer.
Right. Well, had someone tapped me on the shoulder in the fan zone pre-match and said, Craig, you do realise that the match you're just about to watch is going to be in the top three matches you've ever witnessed at Portman Road, I might have thought, do you know what? I might make my way to my seat there and get there in plenty of time. Because there was a chat going on today in the Telegram group about that exact topic. Where does it rank? And I can only think of one, the obvious one from 2000 that goes above it, to be perfectly honest. Oh, everything considered, you know, league status, league position, timing of goals, etc., etc., and just the sheer pandemonium that went on at the final goal and the final whistle. I'm putting it number two currently.
It just beggars belief now, Dave, doesn't it? I mean, I've heard you say you couldn't script it, and I'm like, well, you could script it, but if you did now, it'd be like you're getting fired for writing ridiculously far-fetched scripts. Dave, you go back a bit further. You got some big Portman Road nights and afternoons. Where does that rank?
Beating Barcelona twice. They're all in there. Yeah, it's up there. I think I said when James posed the question on Telegram this afternoon. Certainly for me, comfortably the biggest high. Yeah, my favourite game since the Burley era. I mean, there was several games in Joe Royal, and that includes like the Arsenal game and things like that. Yeah, definitely out there. Still my favourite game, someone else said, was a cup replay against Forest, just the narrative of that back in the day. But yeah, just a fantastic night. And even just the whole atmosphere last night around the ground, completely round the ground when that winning goal went in, was something. It really was something to behold. So yeah, like Craig, it's probably would be up there in my top five, probably easily. Fantastic.
Unbelievable. Welcome to the Blue Monday podcast, everybody. If you are watching live on YouTube tonight, please get involved in the chat. There's loads of you in there and we're loving your enthusiasm. And lots of people are asking whether my head has exploded or is going to explode. That was my reaction from over in Bedfordshire. My season ticket was sat empty yesterday. Ooh. Sadly, I was working in the afternoon, so I couldn't make it down. But I tell you what, I loved watching it, and I'm living very much vicariously through Craig and Dave for the next week. While we're going to, and we hope you're okay with indulging us, we're going to rip the format up today, and we are going to go chapter on verse like the old days on this spectacular game from Portman Road last night. If you're listening after the fact on podcast, you will realise that someone might have shagged his voice yelling last night as well at the TV screen. I'll try my best and hand over to Dave. We appreciate the hell out of you. Give us a 5-star review and all of that good stuff. Craig, let's get into this. So I think you were right on the team selection. I wanted Clark and I wanted Broadhead. I didn't get either of them, but damn well I'm going to get Broadhead later on, and I love it. Flagkey in goal. Tuan Zabi, Wolfenden, Burgess the return. Leif Davis again. Let's just not even discuss him now at this point. Morsi, Luongo, Caden Jackson. I think both of you mooted that one in the show after the Blackburn game. Chaplin, Hutchinson moves out to the left-hand side. Kiefer Moore up top. I think you called that pretty accurately, Craig.
Yeah, I think between Dave and I, we did actually. In terms of Burgess coming in for Edmondson, we said if Luongo can manage the two games in the four days, that he'll certainly start alongside Morsi. And then it was a case of up front, the attacking four. And again, we thought on the back of Broadhead's game against Blackburn, and even though it was a home game, we did both say, actually, I think it might be time just to give him a rest. And then it was a case of whether it was going to be Sarmiento or Jackson that played that right-hand side. The only downside of that is probably that Amari Hutchinson then needs to play on the left, when it's out of the three positions behind the striker, that's probably his weakest one. And something that Mick Mills has actually picked up on whenever you're driving home in the car, he says exactly that. He reckons that his best position's on the right, then 10, then left. Compares him to Chris Waddle, of all people, who was similar. Couldn't play on the left for Toffee, according to Mick Mills, when he was his coach at Sheffield Wednesday. I think we...
Is that true?
Yeah. He reckons he was 100 times better player on the right, where he could jink in on his left, than he was on the left having to go round players on his left, sort of thing. So.
Chris Waddle. Sorry, you shouldn't be talking about Chris Waddle. Just a ridiculous player, wasn't he? Just no pace, nothing at all, but just had that trick.
Dave, anything to... I think Craig's nailed the...
No, nailed it really. No, I think the main thing there was, and as it proved, I thought throughout last night, was Burgess being back, because he was a rock. Probably the others. We thought Broadhead was a little bit, I didn't want to be too critical of Broadhead, he was a little bit indifferent on Friday against Blackburn. So, yeah, and it didn't surprise us, I think.
He'll always deliver, though, Dave.
He'll always deliver. That Jackson got the nod on the right side.
Here is another one of our year one parachute squads to discuss. Bazunu in goal, Bree and Stevens, the fullbacks, and fair play to Russ Martin. I know he's been widely mocked. Stevens moving into central midfield worked a treat for 62 minutes of this game. More of that later on. Bednarek and Harwood Bellis. Stuart Armstrong and a midfielder called Downs, who's probably got a chance of playing at the top level again, I would imagine. Joe Aribo in what was a strong central midfield until it was broken up by their manager. More of that later. Up top, Dave, one of our first ever Blue Monday crushes, Ryan Fraser. Che Adams, a huge 10 million or plus sale from Birmingham up to Southampton. And Adam Armstrong, who before this game had 30 goal contributions. Dave, people get a bit emotional about me saying other teams have good players.
Oh.
This team has a lot of good players.
I mean, for now, well, certainly first half. I mean, we'll get on to what happened in the 8th minute, in a minute, or whatever minute it was, 11th, whatever minute it was. But goodness me, what a lovely football team. What a lovely football team they are. They really are. We'll get on to it. But I honestly thought that for most of that game last night, they were the best side I've seen. I thought they're better than Leeds.
I was thinking the same, Dave. And I'll bring Craig in on this. I think Leeds just walloped us for 10 minutes and scored three goals, and then it was reasonably even. Whereas, as we're going to get on to for a good 50 minutes of this game, and Leicester only did it for 15, 20 minutes in both games, but what was your take on what Dave just said?
Yeah, exactly that, in terms of the performance. Even the Leeds away game, they were just like relentlessly attacking rather than... It was just we were being systematically sort of just dismantled for an hour in front of our eyes, and you thought, crikey, this... It had sort of echoes of the West Brom away game, in that if you come up against a team that's full of good players and are set up the right way and they all decide to play well in that formation and they're better players than our players, then you're going to have to be playing very, very well to overcome that.
And I thought physically strong as well. Physically, yeah. Big side, yeah. You know. Okay, so we've got Fraser in there, but yeah, and Armstrong as well. But yeah, big, just big, physical, clever, technical. Yeah,
the movement set up as really well. Yeah, they were just, we were just being doubled all over the pitch, weren't we? Somehow, it looked like they had 14 players out there.
I mean, I know, and I know we spoke about their bench the other night, but then you look at the bench, you know, we've been dismantled, and they're still on the bench, Brooks, Rothwell, and Walker Peters, for Christ, on the bench. You feel, well, you know, this is only going to go, well, we'll get onto this, go on.
Yeah, well, we'll come to you, Dave, because I thought Southampton started well, and I thought our goal was not massively against the run of play, but a little bit against the run of play. Yeah, we're going to... Well, that's a really good point, Dave, because I think Sky, you wouldn't have seen this, put up Southampton 78% possession, touches in the box six each. So it was one of those type, you know, lies, damn lies and statistics. But we're going to talk about this pass from Morsi to Davis three times during this game that rips Southampton a new one. Dave, where are you on the razor here of the keeper getting a bit caught and Davis not being closed down and it just being a great hit into the top? Yeah,
I'm going to say it already, a bit of both there, but he just wallops it, doesn't he? I mean, we do really, really well. I think we win the ball in midfield. Is it maybe Wolfenden wins it in midfield and Hutchison goes in quite a good position and he can't quite get it under control. I think he nicks it to Chaplin, who then again pokes it forward and eventually finds its way to Jackson, who, to be fair, puts, I think, a reasonable ball into a good area. They half clear it, but Morsi's got that's a big, high, spinny ball. And his first touch is completely dead, but he's just no one within 5 yards of him. You know, they're really quite deep. And he's got time to actually control the awkward ball, take a touch, look up, and totally, I mean, it's a pinpoint ball, totally float the ball across, diagonally across the box to Davis. And I mean, it's just it's the first touch, which we know is class, but he just, well, I'm going to larrups it. It's absolutely just hammers it. And look, it just takes bazoom. Now, you say keepers shouldn't get beaten on their near post, but there are exceptions.
Oh, I don't say that. I think that's bollocks.
Well, yeah, okay,
I think sometimes the best shot you can take is high on the near post. I agree.
Yeah, well,
you,
good point. By surprise. And I think perhaps it took all of us by surprise, because usually in that position, you're looking at Davis, as we'll get onto later in the game, putting his foot on the ball and picking that pass across the, you know, between the 6 yard box and the penalty spot. But he just absolutely hammers it in the near post, roof of the net, no chance for the keeper. Great, great finish. And as you say, yeah, slightly against the run of play, but what a start.
Anything to add on the goal, Craig?
Just in terms of the time that Morsi had, the ball, I don't know if you saw it on the replay, but the ball was spinning on its axis, really, really, really spinning. Even when he tried to control it, it was still spinning. But Davis has time to actually put his arm in the air and say, I'm free here, ping it out to me, which he does. And the shot itself was a strange one. It's not as if he had like a Stuart Pearce swing of the boot. He sort of checks it as well when he hits it. If you watch the replay, his foot pretty much stops as it hits the ball. But the power in it, and I say it's still rising, you know, as it hits the net, isn't it? It's well and truly on the way up, hits the roof of the net. It's just a great goal.
But here comes Southampton, Craig, straight back. And again, we're in a bit of both territory here. I think it's really good from Aribo and Armstrong in the build up. And as much as we're gonna gush about Leif Davis, it's so bad, isn't it? Because not only does he start ball watching, but he keeps running and he's ended up just kind of strolling along playing. Look, just to get this out before anyone cries in the chat, I bloody love Leif Davis, and I'm going to use the word virtuoso again, same we did after the Bristol City goal. But yeah, sometimes, Craig, I just wonder whether there's so much onus on him attacking-wise that he's a bit knackered when he comes back to defend. But talk to me about the equaliser.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't think it's unfair to suggest that if you were to highlight the very small amount of failings that Leif Davis has, it may well be one-to-one defending possibly and tracking his man back. But the poor guy, as we all know, he was 80 yards away, you know, a couple of seconds earlier. But what's good about this move is the touch from Aribo is that cushioned first-time ball. It's Adams plays it across the pitch into
him. Kills him, doesn't he?
And he just plays that, just that foot. It's pretty much just angles his foot, doesn't he? Uses the pace of the ball, angles his foot, and pushes it into the path of Armstrong, who, as you say, is the wrong side of Davis. And then, yeah, then we're at sixes and sevens, aren't we? Crosses into Adams, who sweeps home, unfortunately. Gets a touch from Arabo, doesn't he? Helps on its way, and Adams sweeps it home from about 6 yards. It was quite interesting because we were having real problems with that Arabo Armstrong couple. You know, they were doing us one in that gap, sort of just in front of Davis. We could not get any to grips with Arabo at all. He was here, there, and everywhere. And I say, yeah, that was just the first of a bit of a torrid 40, 45 minutes for Davis, I think.
Dave?
Yeah, Harry Bow was sweet on the night, wasn't he?
I saw him play, Dave, in the playoff final for Charlton about...
Did you?
Yeah, really? 2019, Charlton Sunderland, they
did
won.
Does he not remind you just how he carries himself and like a lazy sort of... He's jet, isn't he? He's absolutely...
They don't,
he's
like, Dave, they don't like him. The Saints fans. They don't rate him, no.
I kind of see why he's got that sort of lazy, lopey, like Jet, that sort of lazy, lopey type left-footy approach. But,
Davis, it was great. Sorry to interrupt, mate. They had four players in there when Stevens stepped in with Downs and Stuart Armstrong and Arebo, who could look after the ball, couldn't they?
Stevens, as we all have said, that also was having a lovely old time last night, wasn't he? It's good from Adams, actually, the ball into him. The first-time ball from Adams is two pretty good bits of play. The first-time ball from Adams, the touch, as Craig quite rightly said, that takes Davis completely out of the game. Bit fortunate, maybe, when the ball's played back to fortunate. We'll get onto the fifth goal in a minute. But perhaps a little bit fortunate when the ball breaks to Arebo in the box. He kind of miscontrols it, can't quite get a shot off. Does quite well just to poke it forward. And, predator finish, really, from who sort of got goal side of Twanzabi, sort of predator finish from Adams. Really shout for offside, but clearly Davis is playing him off.
Dave, go straight to the second goal.
Mate, honestly.
Dave, I said... sort of on my watch along that I didn't really think Southampton deserved to be behind. And when they took the lead, that did kind of feel a little bit more a fair reflection of how the game went in the first 24. But Stuart Armstrong to Adam Armstrong.
Yeah, I mean, Stuart Armstrong receives the ball, a lot of space from the back, I think. I think he might even receive it from Stevens. Quite a lot of space on halfway. Jackson just do the professional thing there and clip his heels every single time. He just outpaces Jackson. He just gets away, and Jackson's sort of there behind him. Just take one.
He's doing
his
job, though, isn't he? He's not a defensive player, Jackson.
No, he isn't. No, absolutely quite right. But, you know, if you watch that back, take one for the team and clip him on halfway. But then it's just absolutely brilliant. The weight of ball from Armstrong, from Stuart Armstrong to Adam Armstrong is ridiculous. And again, Davis, I mean, it's a brilliant first-time finish. The weight of ball makes the goal. It's a brilliant first-time finish, like 20th goal of the season. Again, Davis just gets there a little bit too late on the slide, but it's a brilliant, the one of the passes of the season, that one, just for the sheer weight and just how it bisects perfectly Burgess and Wolfenden. Brilliant goal.
Craig?
Yeah, it's that one pass that takes out three of our players, doesn't it? As Dave said, it's played between the two centre-halves and behind Davis, or just one straight pass does three of our players. And as Dave says again, it's just into the path of Armstrong, just to take it first time, a side foot it into the far corner. It's the sort of goal you'd like us.
It's one of those goals where you think, Christ, that was a bit soft, that was easily preventable. And then you watch that goal back, it was just class.
Once they get past Jackson, it's not stoppable, is it? Because you're on your heels, everyone's running backwards, the gaps are opening up within your defence. As you say, it was that the chance was on the halfway line just to clip his heels, nudge his thigh, whatever it needed just to
stop it. And I know we referred to it earlier, but at that stage, you know, so they've equalised, what, seconds after they've scored, what, another 5-6 minutes later. At that stage, I thought, hang on, this could be another Leeds at home.
Yeah, I did. That's exactly what I thought, Dave. Well, let's go on to that, Craig, because, look, obviously we can be a little bit more lucid about it because we know the final outcome, but... I really feared for the worst bit. I mean, not just minutes 24 to 45 plus stoppage time, but all the way through to the hour mark. Problems. Kiefer Moore gets hurt, and we'll talk about Saturday in a minute, and the impact of Moore going out at Cardiff and Blackburn was not good on our team. Ryan Fraser, gigantic chance to make it 3-1. Sam Morsy, I dare say, doesn't get booked for a tackle that was probably worse than the tackle that he got booked for to be on a yellow card as he's chasing with Flynn Downs. Really problematic into the first half, Craig.
Yeah, as you say about Morsy, he got booked spot on about quarter of an hour mark, wasn't it, pretty much? So then you're thinking...
That's 13, Craig.
It is. Everyone's counting.
We are.
Yeah, and Luongo wasn't in the game at all. He was getting overrun in the middle. Flynn Downs was sort of showing us what we always thought he was, albeit probably not as progressive with his passing, but that's not how Southampton are set up to play. But he was mopping every single thing up that was even deflected slightly off our attackers. He was there picking it up and just restarting their play every single time. And as we know, you know, he's a physical specimen anyway, and he'll just keep going and going and going. But that was a great, great tussle to watch between him and Morsy. And, you know, they were toing and froing all through the second half as well. You know, he was kicking Morsy and dragging him to the floor, and Morsy was holding him back. And yeah, that was a good battle. But then as you rightly say, they did have chances. That one that Armstrong flicked through to Fraser, and Fraser whipped across the face of the goal.
He scored that, Craig.
Probably hit probably hit the target if not scored with that. But yeah, as you say, that first half we were sixes and sevens and did well to sort of keep it within the one goal deficit, because as I say, we were being taken apart a little. We weren't really getting taken apart because they were just, I'm trying to look, what we're looking for is clinical. Incisive, yeah, absolutely. They were just playing exactly as Russell Martin would hope they would have played. I would have thought they were doing everything absolutely perfectly. I would have thought there were overloads all over the pitch, weren't there? They just had so many. They just seemed to have two players on both of our fullbacks at all times. Plus, they were overrunning us in the middle of midfield as well, which, we did well to get out of it, I think, at 2-1.
Dave?
Yeah, no, I think it's a fair reflection of where we were, really. I think I was saying to my youngest lad I was with last night, you know, let's get in at half time at 2-1. Get in at half time at 2-1, reset, and then start come out and start again. Almost calling for a change at half time. But
is it numbers, Dave? What's your reaction to that? First half, 68% possession Saints, 0.87, but ours is only 0.16 on the XG.
Nine
shots to 3-2 on target.
Yeah, no, it's a fair. Well, obviously, stats for once aren't lying there, are they? That was a pretty good reflection of how the first half was.
And Dave, I'll stay with you. I thought we rallied for about 2 minutes at the start of the second half, and then same thing. And Flagkey is going to have a really excellent period in the second half, keeping us in it. But again, it's Fraser. I think he's in. I think it hits Wolfenden in the end. It's a great, great kind of narrowing down of the angle. But again, it's not like, okay, we're in at half time and we've regrouped and we've overpowered them in the second half. This doesn't happen until the substitutions we're about to talk about, Dave.
No, it doesn't. They're still on top. And good for him. Hladke comes out really quickly there. Does it? He narrows the angle. Lovely bit of football to create the chance there for Fraser. So, we're still, you know, as we've said here, for 60 minutes, we're second best comfortably.
Yeah, Craig?
Yeah, exactly that. And as the comments said there about our fitness, that's one thing that struck me in the first. I thought, crikey, we're doing so much running around here, just back and forth across the pitch and trying to close people down, that it's just testament to how fit that team is. But I met one of our Telegram guys at half time. He came along and said hello, Phil. And he said, he said, I'd take 2-2. I said, yeah. I said, well, I think it'd probably be 3-2 to Ipswich.
Craig, I'd have taken 2-2 at every point of the game other than 96 minutes and 54 seconds.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, what we were saying, we'll take it. When it was 1-1, crikey, we'll take this.
Apart
at
from that, Sam Bloody Parkin had 3-2 in the predictions and I had 2-2. Brutal. Absolutely brutal. I'll take it. I'll take it all day long. I think it's very easy, Dave, to call a manager a genius after They make a treble substitution and two of the players combine for a goal in 6 minutes. And then the third player, or rather a player later in the game, scores the winner. Forgive me. Dave, I wanted Clark. I wanted Broadhead. But love Massimo Luongo. But what we really needed was Jack Taylor.
Yeah, superb. They really, really did. Really did show his worth. Just gave us that extra bit, I thought, of physicality in there last night. Perhaps a little bit more mobile, I thought. As someone said there, Luongo struggled last night. I just think they were, for that, till that period, they were just absolutely swamping us in midfield. That was more the issue, not him between particularly bad. It was just how he was, how he was allowed to play or wasn't allowed to play.
But they were jumping on every mistake, weren't they, Dave? Every little touch, sharp, exactly. I think I said that,
Craig, when I said, I think first half, Christ, they're sharp in possession. And then you said, well, they're also very sharp out of possession, and quite right. Yeah, absolutely.
And here comes the main man, Nathan Broadhead, Craig, with the equalising goal. First of all, I do need to say, it can be really honest, when Moore went out and Al Hammadi came in, totally behind the guy. I really want him to do well, but he's a League Two guy and he stepped up from Wimbledon. And I was like, oh, is he going to, struggle in this? And is, are the fans going to be cross at him because he's not Kiefer Moore or George Hurst? But when he hits the post, I think his confidence kind of, it's like he powers back up before the goal. Can you talk about that, Craig? And just a brilliant goal with Taylor and Broadhead combining.
Yeah, well, before the match, when we were chatting about lineups and things, and we were talking about Kiefer Moore and saying, on the back of last week's games, international games and Blackburn's game and what happened when he went off the pitch, we were sort of saying between ourselves, crikey, we still need to get as many minutes as we can out of Kiefer Moore, 75, 80 minutes probably. Lo and behold, he's disappearing off down the tunnel on 35, whatever it was. Yeah, absolutely. And then, as you say, it's just such a jump for Al Hammadi to take, isn't it? And there's such a lot of responsibility on that position within our setup as well, that central striker. But he was quite unfortunate with that shot, wasn't he?
I think he scores if he doesn't slip, doesn't he?
Yeah, because we couldn't see that from our position. I don't know if you could see it from yours, but you didn't appreciate that he actually his standing leg had slipped from underneath.
No, I couldn't see
just
that.
As he was about to hit it. You thought, well, crikey, he's middle of the goal. The goalkeeper's on his line. He's got to be hitting the target. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But even the jink from Al Hammadi to get into that position, the ball doesn't move. His body throws one, if not two, defenders out of the way for him to for it to open up the space. So, yeah, unfortunately for him, it didn't go in. But the equalising goal starts off with Chaplin, doesn't it, over on the right, and he drills that infamous ball we've seen a few times before, drilled from right to left over to Davis, who, as he does, takes it in his stride on his chest, but for once doesn't carry on going forward like he normally does, but he checks and lays the ball back to Taylor, who's, 4 or 5 yards outside the area. As we were talking about, Aribo's cushion pass into Armstrong for their first goal. It's just such a lovely, again, just a cushion pass in the first time, cushion pass into Broadhead with just exactly the right sort of pace on it. Broadhead has just snuck inside the box and he's, as we were speaking about earlier on Telegram, just looking around, always looking around, knows exactly where the goal is, knows exactly where the defenders are or aren't, and just sort of helps it on its way into the far, well, not even maybe into the far corner. The Gavin Bazuna fan club might suggest it wasn't into the far corner. But again, like we were talking about Chaplin's goal at the weekend, because he takes it so early, the goalkeeper's probably not used to not set himself and ready for the shot. So, yeah, that cushion pass from Taylor, first time cushion pass, and the first time shot from Broadhead just, takes everyone by surprise, I think.
Dave?
Yeah, it's the pass from Taylor is just so simple but so brilliant. It's almost disguised, but it's not. You just don't see passes like that, we know Taylor's got it, when Davis lays it back to Taylor, you're just thinking, oh, just get it out of your feet, 20 odd yards out, get it out of your feet, have a crack. The awareness of the pass is just, it's a ridiculous ball. It's such a simple ball, but it's a stupidly good. And as you said, the finish is brilliant because he just immediately just hits it first time, turns.
They're not expecting him to hit it with his right foot.
Not expected at all. Props to Bazuna, really. It does go through. I think it's Howard Bellis, doesn't it? It goes through Howard Bellis, but just a brilliant, brilliant goal, brilliant finish. But the pass is mad. for such a simple pass, it's a crazy pass. Not quite on Armstrong's level for their second goal, but it's up there. Just so simple, so brilliant.
As you say, David, it's unexpected from Taylor as well. Yeah. It's not the sort of thing you'd expect. As you say, what you expected to do is knock it a yard to his right and have a slam it towards goal. But yeah, it's just a lovely, subtle pass.
And you made a good point there. Broadhead, always very aware. His movement was great. If you look, I watched that goal back a couple of times. He's got his eye on the defender as soon as Davis lays the ball back to Taylor. He's got half an eye on the defender, creates a yard of space, not even that. That's all he needs. It's a brilliant finish.
And I know I get stick for being the Broadhead fanboy. Nobody else in our attacking roster has got that specific skill set that he's got in terms of finding those, yeah. Finding those pockets in the way he does.
And that's the one thing we did say, actually, Ben, sorry to interrupt, is when we were talking at the weekend about the lineup for tonight and saying that Broadhead may well drop out, we did say that that's the one thing that, or one of the things that we will miss, is that ability just to get shots off. That's what we know that Broadhead does.
But this is the thing with the rotation. I was sat there thinking, okay, we stink a little bit here. This could go 3-1, 4-1. But when it stays 2-1 and you've got Broadhead or Sarmiento or Clark or whoever to bring in, there's a decent bit of quality on the bench. David's going to get a little bit basketball-y now, which for the neutral must have just been fantastic. It's just a brilliant game. Bit heart attack City to us, but I'm going to go to the red card and I'll give you my view first off. I know we get people crying in the comments if we even discuss the decision that went for Ipswich, but we've got to discuss the decision. So Davis, brilliant chest down, suckers Bree in. My first instinct was, do I need to see that again? Is Harwood Bellis close enough for it not to be the denial of obvious goal-scoring opportunity? But I think what happens, Dave, on the replays is sometimes you see the foul, you see the player go down, you see the other player run across, and then you make the judgment. And then I think when I watch back the replay, and it's always important that you don't judge the identity of the player. It doesn't matter how much pace they've got or whether they're not going to shoot with their right foot. I think he did deny an obvious goal-scoring opportunity there, Dave.
I mean, the touch from Davies is crazy. Again, the timing of the touch off his chest to actually manoeuvre the ball as the ball's dropping, to manoeuvre the ball into his stride off his chest is one thing. So he totally commits, Bree, doesn't he? He's totally committed there. And had he not, it was a straight red, wasn't it? Had it been a yellow, yeah, there'd have been a bit of booing, I guess. It was ultimately, it was clearly outside the box. So that's one thing dealt with. Had it simply been a yellow, yes, I think there'd have been a bit of booing from the crowd, but I think people would have accepted it. But then again, you looking back on it, did he get it out? Was it on his left foot? Goal scoring opportunity? Yeah, probably was.
Craig?
Yeah, pretty much agree with how you saw it, really, Ben. But just before that, we're talking about Taylor. He'd crunched in, hadn't he? In the sense, he'd been booked himself, and we were sort of crying out for that a little bit where we were, saying, let's
get amongst it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Let's take a couple of yellows here. Let's maybe not Morsey, but let's spread it around a bit, get some tackles in, get the crowd going, which it did. But no, I think you're right in the replays, and that's what Russell Martin saw, I believe, was when he went back to look at his iPad and saw the replay, and you just see. Was it Harwood Bellis coming across?
Yeah.
Yeah. You see him sort of coming across in the shot. Well, yeah, but by the time all that's happened, Davis would have had the shot.
He would have been able to get the shot off with his right foot, wouldn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. But what was interesting was that the Southampton didn't really change anything, did they? Which was strange, considering they'd lost the right back who was marking Davis. Didn't really seem to cover the gap that left. Fair play, they kept going for it. And as you say, Ben, it was a bit of a basketball match at that point. But the feeling up our neck of the woods was, well, now it's gone to 10. The ball is now in our court.
Yep.
You would have thought that they're going to be a little bit more defensive, and this is our opportunity to make hay. And I think my timing's right. It hadn't the two substitutions happened just before 80, the red card?
81, wasn't it? 81.
Yeah, Armstrong and Aribo had just been taken off, bizarrely, given they were two of their better, if not best, players of the night. And therefore, you know, the pendulum was starting to swing in our...
To be fair, Rockwell and Smallbone at championship level are really good.
They are, but the guy, the way that those two have been playing, I thought they were fantastic. I thought they were really, really good last night.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Those two particular.
Just to your point on the fullback, and it's coming up in the chat as well. For the most part, when they had the ball, Southampton, it was very Maresca or trying to be BTEC Pep or whatever, where one player was going into midfield. So I guess they were used to defending with three spread out anyway, weren't they? With Stevens moving into midfield. So I guess that would be the justification for no one kind of covering the right back. We need to mention as well, just I think I did, didn't I? Fladke, very good in the second half. It's a glancing header day from, was it Bednarek's shoulder maybe? And he makes a good save, doesn't
free
he?
Free kick
and,
when early doors, that glanced it across near the goal.
Good one, Dave, from Armstrong as well. How many times do you see those spin in the corner and he's right behind it, right comfortable. I thought Fladke was good.
But there were blocks.
There was another one from Armstrong as well where he had two bites at it. The ball's cut back and he has one. I think Kladke blocks it. Then he has another chance on the near post. And I think a combination, maybe Kladke and maybe Wolfenden blocks that one. Then before we scored, there was that unbelievable clearance from Wolfenden where that class bit of play, the back heel, the little back heel from Brooks, and they get in on the right. It's a great ball in, and Wolfenden, superb bit of defending on a 6-yard box.
Yeah.
Dave, here comes Jeremy Sarmiento, who I sometimes watch him when he comes on, and I'm like, mate, calm down. You're running around like a headless chicken.
A little bit headless.
Get it under control. The man can do what he likes after after the kind of Leicester game and this game. 7 minutes stoppage time. I think if we're analysing the whole game, Dave, we're very happy with 2-2 and four points over.
Get out of dodge, 2-2. Keeps them 10 points behind. All right, two games in hand, but still keeps them 10 points behind. Right. But this is all about Morsey, isn't it? You know, his will driving for midfield. He gets the ball inside from Clark. Armstrong has a little bite at him and good advantage from the ref. Morsey sort of rides that. And again, you know, drives forward. He's passing that ball again to Davis, and this is the Davis trademark, isn't it? The ball to Davis, who just again gets it under control, gets it out of his feet, and that ball across.
Davis been playing 96 minutes and he's already
well, if you remember, he cramped up literally 5 minutes before then. He cramped up, so he was blowing, and that trademark ball between the 6-yard box, perhaps 6-yard box and penalty spot, and the chance is gone. I mean, it's very much like I said to my lad last night, very much like the row goal for Norwich, where the chance is virtually gone. He has a swing at it, loses his footing, as similar to Al Hamidi, actually.
But then what a touch, really, is he slipping, Dave?
But yeah, no, exactly. It's a brilliant part of this goal, which makes the goal. The defender's going to get that away. But somehow, as he's falling, he just somehow gets the ball on his left foot and nudges it. And just the balance is unbelievable. Just toe pokes it in off his, you know, he's almost sitting half and half on his backside, isn't he? And just toe pokes it in the corner.
Right in the corner, finish. Dave.
And cue pandemonium at Port Moreau, which again, we all said, I haven't seen like that for many, many a year.
Craig, what a moment.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And the thing is, as well, because of the fortunate fact that people take their camera phones into the grounds nowadays, it's been recorded from all different angles, from all areas of the ground. And yeah, it was absolutely crazy where I am in the family enclosure. And we've got a great vantage point over to the Blue Action guys and the North Stand, and it was bedlam in there. It was bedlam in the South Stand. It was bedlam on the pitch. There's a great, great video of, I think it's probably from in front of the away fans looking diagonally across towards the North Stand, and you see Chaplin, and they track Chaplin all the way from the dugout across the pitch.
Craig, didn't Carlos Corberon get a red card for entering the field of player earlier in the season?
Yeah, very possibly. But
sprints across the pitch.
Diagonally straight across the pitch. But at the time, I think it's Morsey has fallen to his knees and is on his hands and knees on the edge of the box. And as Chaplin's going, he ignores that. He does a little jump hurdle over Morsey and just carries on directly towards the corner flag. By that time, Halagki's made his way up from the back as well. Wolfenden's there as well. And fair play to the town cameraman who's on his hands and knees and sticking his camera right into everyone's faces down that corner flag as well. It's just one of those, it's one of those moments, isn't it? It's one of those, I was there, and moments you'll remember the rest of your life. And I was on BBC Suffolk this morning speaking to Wayne Bavin on his breakfast show and saying that there were so many kids there last night, and it was noticeable. I appreciate I sit around the kids' area anyway, but even coming at the ground, there were a lot of kids there last night, and it's just days and evenings and memories like that that will live with them forever and ever and ever. You know, you still do remember those games and those goals from when you were a kid, and it was most definitely 100% one of those moments.
Yeah, I mean, in the last era of Ipswich Town, probably, you'd compare that moment to Magilton equaliser, probably, I'm talking about Port Moreau, the Magilton equaliser against Bolton, and probably the Royster winner, probably.
Cunago dinking it over. Yeah. Coventry,
then you've got to see how many people were in the crowd that night. I mean, again, you know, 30,000 there last night.
Yeah.
Just incredible.
Utterly, utterly incredible. And Kieran McKenna trying to say, okay, calm down. We didn't win yet. Get back in the dugout. He lost himself for a few seconds, didn't he? And then, managed to get back to cool, calm, collected. But just absolutely amazing. And look, I don't know about you guys or you lot in the chat. I've just got to the point now where I'm just laughing at the resentful comments now that. Yeah. Refuse to give any credit to this amazing team that's come up from League One that are going against three of, you know, the biggest broadcast bonus anyone's ever got in the Championship. Those three teams got it this season. They've got amazing squads. We're literally playing against one of them in this game. We hang in there. We take the best they've got, all the punches, and we still come back. And Dave, I'm just ignoring it now because, to me, that's just a signal of you've run out of ideas now. If it's just voodoo,
and not being funny, you know, you looking at the wider picture here, the way they put Southampton played last night, they can quite well take points off Leicester and Leeds, flipping heck. But
certainly Leicester, couldn't they? Given they're playing them relatively soon,
when they're playing
Leeds last game. Mm. Yeah, good point actually. Yeah, that's a good point, but. As someone else pointed out, and I don't like to tempt fate and mention it, you wouldn't really want to be playing it. You know, like you're going to be playing someone decent if it goes to playoff, but you wouldn't want to be coming up against them at any point, I don't think. Well, certainly not over two. Or do you disagree?
I think little Mr. Corberon could still eat Mr. Russ Martin for dinner in the playoff. You could see it though, couldn't you? You could see a defensive masterclass. But yeah, just absolutely, absolutely incredible. And we'll have a look at the table and we'll take your questions in just a second. Maybe Dave might mute his phone as well.
It's not even my phone. I wouldn't mind. It's not even my phone.
Oh, who says it? Is it Teresa's?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'll take it back then. Oh, I haven't even got an Innovation Labs ad to run here.
All right, I can mute it now, though. Come on, I can go and give me the opportunity.
They've got offices in Kuala Lumpur.
There you go. Let's get the table up, Craig, because it didn't quite go the way that it did on Good Friday.
Peek behind the curtain.
Yeah, in respect of others dropping points, everybody won. But Craig, Leeds, they won fairly late on, but they were good value for it. It's not a game you look back and you think it wasn't like our game where we kind of snuck it in the 97th minute. Leicester fairly comfortable in the end against Norwich, and I spoke to Jack from Talk Norwich City today on the Sportsman podcast. He's really disappointed. He said Leicester looked really vulnerable and Norwich kind of sat and, you know, could have really been a bit more aggressive at
they were really passive. I watched it before I left for our game. Norwich literally all they had was that one corner, that one shot from the corner, and that was it. They were just so passive, they just could not get going at all. Much of it's down to how Leicester played, etc., I don't know.
Well, they were okay until they scored. Norwich was, they were pretty up till they scored, and then they scored, and then that was, you're right, that was like it. It was weird.
I hope Dewsbury Hall's okay, though. He's taking a few tumbles.
Yeah, that'd be terrible, wouldn't it? Yeah.
So the way I'm looking at this now is that we've just taken 3 points out of Southampton and they're now 13 points behind us. And yes, you can. I do agree with what David said. They're a really good quality bunch of players, but basically, they've got 7 games in 21 days, Dave, I think they need to either win 6 or 7 to get to the last day and be in touch. Dave, is that a three-horse race for you now? Blow to Saints?
You'd probably say if they can get to the last day and still in touch, that'll probably mean they've got a result at Leicester. So
that'd be great news for Leeds and Leicester and Ipswich fans, wouldn't it, if Southampton could get to the last day in touch?
Look, realistically, despite what Russ Martin said about winning the next eight games, looking at those 8 games, realistically, that's them out of the top 2 now. And I think actually Sky might have even acknowledged that last night to a degree. Like we said, all day long, coming up the 96th minute, I'd have taken a 2-2 draw and keep them at arm's length, 10 points behind. Okay, they win their 2 games in hand, there's still 4 points, but just the icing on the cake, what happened. Just quickly, just mention Leeds. Football's a funny old thing, and it's about zero to hero. Dan James, a week ago, misses the crucial penalty for Wales, and great finish. I know it was empty net, but great finish from almost the halfway line last night. For the third goal.
Clark is not stupid, and he stuck him straight in for the next 2 games with Nonto injured, didn't he?
Well, I suppose his hand was forced a bit, though, with Nonto, but yeah.
Craig, something that I don't like, if you look, and I did a video on this on my own YouTube channel today, we're the big winners in the top 2 race with 6, Leeds with 4, Leicester with 3, Southampton the big losers with 1. In the playoff race, nothing changed. West Brom got 2 points. Norwich, Coventry and Preston all got 3. Middlesbrough got 4, but really they probably needed 6, being unlike Coventry and Preston, haven't got a game in hand. So still, Craig, I've still got Norwich finishing 6th and playing whoever doesn't make the top 2 in the playoffs. So it's just, shoot me down for saying it, Craig, but that's how I feel.
Things are looking like they're starting to solidify, don't they, around that 5th and 6th spot. And there was a point in time not that long ago where you could throw a hanky over the teams in 6th down to about 10th, couldn't you, including the likes of Sunderland. But cross, what the hell? I know I speak about this all the time because I've got a few mates who are Sunderland fans. what on earth have they done to their season? Just basically waving a white flag, having sacked the manager, and thinking, well, you know, we'll just sail on into the for the last remaining five
Greg,
months
you think
of the season.
Blackburn were getting some frustration out of the last half an hour against us, where we were clinging on out in that game.
Yeah, shame that.
Can't all be down to, surely it can't all be down to Jack Clark. What really surprised me last night was looking at the table. Hull are now 10th.
Yeah, Hull are six without a win and one of only two teams along with Plymouth to get 0 points across Easter. So I know we're going to get questions about FFP, but if I'm a Hull fan and I've seen what they've done in January, I'm perhaps a little bit concerned that maybe very quickly a Jaden Philogene or a Jacob Greaves could be leaving them before what would it be, July the 1st, if they can get that deal done.
The issue with Coventry catching Norwich Sergeant Truck, Ben, is that their next two games are Leicester and Southampton.
And they play us and Hull in their last four games. Coventry got a... I tell you what, Coventry getting into the playoffs might even trump Southampton getting... No, it wouldn't trump Southampton getting second, but yeah, you're right. Get your questions in. I said we were going to do a bit of a different format today, and we've gone really long on the game, but it was so, so spectacular that we thought we would do that and then just end with some questions. Now, stick a Q before, stick a question mark after. Craig and myself are going to be here on
Thursday
to preview a game that we literally haven't mentioned all podcast, away at Norwich City. I'm going to be on the Talk Norwich City show with Jack at some point, I think, on Wednesday as well. So check that out. I know some people don't want to listen to the opposition side, but I think we always have a good debate, me and Jack.
Jack's mate going to be on there as well, Ben?
Funnily enough, he's avoided me for 6 years since his last performance in a podcast me. So I'll debate with anybody. Me, you know, just if you want to take me on, you might lose. But you know, just be civil, Dave, and it's all right. You've lasted long enough, haven't you, matey? Hey,
yeah, I'll wipe the floor with you and pop, master.
Right, let's get some questions in. There you go. We'll discuss this at length on Thursday, Craig, so I'll pass it straight to Dave. Taylor to start on Saturday or now? I don't mind either answer to that one, Dave.
Oh, yeah, that's a good shout. You know what? Perhaps on the balance of last night, yes. But, you know, no McKenna, it'll probably be Travis.
Craig, how confident are you guys? Oh, this is Anna, who's a great lad, a Bristol City fan. He's got a channel of his own. Go and give him a... give him a follow. He actually stood in for Mikey doing the Premier League predictions on my channel as well. So go and give him a follow. How confident are you guys about finishing the top two? From an outsider perspective, it feels like it's written in the stars. Notice how Anir says written in the stars, not you lucky bastards, hey?
Well, I'm feeling more confident after every win. And as we say, every week we seem to say, well, we know a lot more this time next week, and we'll know a lot more this time next week. And we said, didn't we, at the weekend that, crikey, can you imagine getting to the flagship show after Norwich and having a 9-point week? Well, we're two-thirds of the way,
Craig,
there.
We won Norwich, 9 out of 10 in a promotion run.
Yes, we have. And if we win 6 out of the next 6, we'll be playing Premier League football next year. Yeah, I'm getting there now. I'm almost at Joe Fair's level of confidence.
Craig, I got asked today and I said never at any point this season have I backed Ipswich to get automatic promotion. Even before the Easter weekend, I was like, this is going to be so close. And I just think Leicester with the goal difference, the game in hand and the extra point, you know, have the advantage. And I thought they would get over the line. But the extra point's gone. The goal difference is still there. The game in hand. Once that goes, maybe I'm fully on the bus. David, Richard Howenstein. Howenstein? Sorry, I probably butchered your name in one or two ways there. What's the magic number of wins in the remaining games for us? Hey, can I add a twist to that question, Dave, because I'm sure you could sit there and say, oh, you need to win four of the last six or whatever. That assumes no one's going to have, dare I mention it, when we lost the crew and Birmingham in a run-in infamously at the end of the... That presumes that no one's going to have a crazy... Remember Leeds losing to Wigan Easter a couple of years ago, and then Brentford, and Wigan had 10... It's Paul Cook's Wigan. Leeds had 36 shots and Wigan had two and won 2-1. Can you see the mad result from anyone where they lose a ridiculous home game?
I don't even know what I think because those games still... those two games you mentioned still haunt me, to be fair, all these years later. Well, look... Four wins and a draw will get us 100 points. Four wins and a draw will get us 100 points. You would think that will be enough. That should be enough, shouldn't it? 100 points will get the job done. Probably, you would think, surely 98, 99 would probably also get it done. But
we didn't win League One with 99. Was it 99?
Yeah, good point. I'd say four. If someone's mentioned it there, you know, yeah, six, I think, is probably a bit too much to hope for. But yeah, four wins and a draw, I think we're there.
Stop it. Oh my God. It wasn't funny when you said that, Dave. Don't do that to me. MJ, not in that way, Craig. MJ, with Norwich profile centre-backs, would El Hamadi be a better option, even the more if he's fit? Craig, I get the spirit of that question, but surely if Kiefer Moore is fit, he starts that game, doesn't he? Surely.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, he does. 100% he does. Even if he's 80% fit, he'll still start that game. It'd be interesting to see how serious... Is it Sorensen that went off for Duffy?
That's a good point.
In the Leicester game? Because Duffy's not the greatest central defender in the world. And if
he
Moore
played well
can
in
have...
the first game against us, didn't he?
Yeah, but if Moore can have 60, 65 minutes of beating up Duffy and then you bring on Al Hamadi's pace to go again, that I'd imagine would be the game plan, because yeah, if Moore's fit, then Moore plays.
Yeah, it'll be a really big shout to play El Hamadi from the start on Saturday, I think.
Yeah. Would it be a really big shout to play Nathan Broad? Get him back in, Dave. Nathan,
do you want to answer this one, Ben?
Sorry?
Do you want to answer this one?
I'd start him. Well, look, I would have started him in the home game and rested him in the away game, as I said. But I think we've all established that Kieran McKenna just knows infinitely more about everything than all of us. So whatever he does, I don't care. I'm behind it. But look, again, I'll repeat what I said earlier, Dave. If you're at minute 60 and you've got Broadhead on the bench, I don't mind that either.
No, you're right. Yeah, I mean, I don't even want to think about that game. I'm glad you two are reviewing it on Thursday, because I don't even want to think about that game. I'll literally try to put it out of my mind till I sit down and watch it, to be fair. But yeah, I mean, you know, Broadhead, as we said, we thought we had in a different game against Blackburn. Obviously, for the last half hour, he was on, scored the class goal, and Jenry's play was great again. Would it surprise anyone to see McKenna start him on Saturday? No, not at all.
The conundrum is that in an away game, he doesn't give you that amount
of tracking back,
but it does then allow Hutchison to play on his better, favoured, inverted commas, side, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Steve, do you think the Derby game is more... Do you know, we're going to save that, Steve, for Thursday. Craig and I are going to have a horrible, sicky feeling for an hour on Thursday night discussing this awful game that we can only enjoy once we know the result. Any news about Moore's injury? That's going to be kept very tightly.
Although he was seen,
Craig, yeah?
Yeah, he was seen post-match and seemed to be moving okay. I think it, from what we
back spasm, gather,
it was a spasm. Yeah, maybe like a whack to the back and things seized like up rather than a
dead leg
pull.
Can I answer this from Sean? What do you think the hardest remaining game of the season is? I don't like Coventry away, because I think I saw what Robbins did in the playoff against Carrick last year. He's well capable of three across the back, sitting in and beating us 1-0. David, I also don't like Andre Brighton-Reiter, Silver Thomas and Michael Hellick for Huddersfield.
Ben,
when we just need to beat Huddersfield on the last day of the season. And I don't know.
Man, I'm not throwing you under the bus here, but I think you did predict defeat at home by Sheffield Wednesday, to be fair.
Take it back.
You didn't predict the win, I don't think.
I predicted 1-0 on my channel. I did. What did I put on the put a draw?
Ooh. I think I might have put a loss.
I think you might have put a loss.
Maybe that was a mistake.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have put us to lose to Sheffield Wednesday, would I?
I don't know. You were sort of figuring at the time. To be fair, I think we said at the time they're on that four-match run, and you were sort of saying, yeah, they're now...
It's almost like I don't spend very much time on these predictions. Bang, 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 bang.
That's Joe just puts W and fills down the column. Fills down the column.
No one can do them faster than Joe. Night Badger, did you find out the situation with Morsi's car tally? We did. And Craig is going to tell you all about it.
Yes. What we believe the case to be, Padger Night Badger, is that his tally, no one else, the 10 yellow card tally, I don't think is a thing anymore. I think we passed that particular curfew, if you like. So it's now only Morsi that's at risk, should we say. And if he gets to 15 before the end of the season, suspensions carry over into the playoffs. So if he picks up his 15th yellow card of the season at Huddersfield, he will, and we finish third or fourth, he will miss both playoff semifinals and the final. However, if he gets to 14 by the end of the season, things are scrubbed. It all starts from zero for the playoff games, if you see what I mean. So if you get two yellows, one in each playoff.
Hey, he is getting booked in the next game. He's getting booked in the first 5 minutes against Norwich, isn't he?
Yeah, and we were talking about this again before the match, is how on earth do you start planning for a three-match suspension? If he gets to 14, what do you do? I don't know. God, I don't know. If he gets to 14 with two games to go of the season or...
Jack Taylor was really good last night when he came on.
Surely, I mean, doomsday scenario here. Doomsday scenario. If he gets to 14, God forbid, with a game left and we're out of it, then surely he gets rested for that Huddersfield game.
Of course he does.
Surely.
Yeah. But if there's any sniff of promotion, he's got to play. Whether he gets,
of course, he's got to play.
Whether he gets booked or not,
Fulcrum, you know, the heartbeat of the team. Of course, he's got to play.
Just quickly, to wind everybody up in the chat, we had a few comments about it earlier. Dave, Leicester's financial results have just been released today, and I think it was. In fact, you can give your general view, and I'll get John Percy's tweet up as we're talking. But
I mean, I didn't actually see the final figures today, but it was something like, was it 92 million or something like that? That's the figure I read a few days ago. There's been some I say odd accounting. They clearly have fallen foul. I haven't seen how they're appeal apparently.
Dave, sorry to interrupt you, buddy. 89.7 million losses. So that was for 22-23. Obviously in the Premier League. Highest wage bill outside the big six. And that will be a guaranteed number because obviously all the Premier League put their figures in December, didn't they? So there's no more to come in. It was Leicester who were waiting. Includes sales of Fofana and Madison and the unplanned cost of Brendan Rodgers' payoff.
Severance. I mean, someone's posted there, what's it, 215 million over 3 years. Well, that is totally...
So that's above. double the limit's 105,
Double the ceiling, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, whatever happens, they've certainly got a points deduction incoming, but it's not going to be this season, is it?
No. Mm. Greg?
And whatever they've done this year in terms of spending more than they maybe should have, knowingly spent more than they should have this season to...
So, Craig, they must have sold Madison and Fofana before July the 1st in the summer for that to have been in the 22-23 book. So there's still... Harvey Barnes was a big sale, wasn't it? Yes. But yeah, you're right. If the wage bill's what we think it is, well, there's all your parachute payments plus probably 20 million. Plus, remember, all of these contracts are stacked with promotion bonuses. I know they don't apply to FFP, but the loss will be massive, even if they do get promoted, won't it?
Yeah, and if they don't get promoted, then you know there's a fire sale happening, isn't there? Yeah. And potential points deduction as well while you're in the championship. So it's quite important they get promoted, I would have thought.
Yeah, and if we're going to go up, given that narrative, you'd like to go up with Leicester.
Why?
Well, if they're going to get a 10-point deduction, I'm sorry.
You're being... I thought, Dave, you were going to... The fight for justice, they don't deserve to go.
No, absolutely not at all. Not at all.
You're all charitable.
Minus... No, absolutely not at all. You've got to look at the bigger picture.
Dave, I was going to say minus six. If they're double the loss limit, and I don't know if there's any adjustable losses in there.
I don't know if there's any criteria for that, is there?
It'll be more than minus six, won't it? Although I get a bit confused because I always judge it on EFL stuff, which is... a 46-game season where a 38-game season, yeah. A point is obviously worth more because there are 24...
Yeah, pro rata.
Look at this. Totally agree, DD. Good thinking, DD. So they're all moaning at Leicester for cheating, but they're fully on with your skull.
Taking advantage of them.
You can...
Right, lads. Final word, and I know I get a little bit emotional and namby-pamby with these... outros, and I think we've been here about 10 times this season, Craig, where I've said, if this is it and you know we suck for the last six games and we lose in the playoffs or whatever, this has just been incredible. And every time there's a new high and beating one of those parachute teams 3-2 with a 97th minute goal, having looked like you were going to get well beaten, it's just another new high for us to just a high watermark for us just to record with this team, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't want to lose in the playoffs now, though. I want to get promoted now. I don't want to come this far and lose in the playoffs. That'd be...
No, horrible. I mean, that would be a tough one after this incredible season. Look, whatever happens now, as Ben said, it's been an incredible season, but that would be a tough one to take. Yeah.
But anyway, on that note, a just incredible Portman Road night. Drink it all in, guys. And you can moan at us for giving you a sick feeling in your stomach, or you can accept that that game was on Bank Holiday Monday. Tomorrow, it's Wednesday, and we play Norwich on Saturday. Forget Southampton being the biggest game of the season. We move at the weekend to the biggest game of the season. Thank you, everybody, for watching the Blue Monday podcast. Thank you for all your comments. Thank you to Craig and Dave. And Craig and I, Richard and Seb are swanning it off in Las Vegas. They're allowed to. We'll give them a holiday. So Craig and I will be here on Thursday for the most nerve-wracking pre-match show ahead of the most nerve-wracking game anybody has ever seen. Thank you, everybody, for watching.
It's the promotion run-in. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much-needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.